Welcome to Book Spectrum. I'm your host, Chris Cordani. On Book Spectrum, we don't focus on specific genres. You know that already. And not only on fact or fiction. We introduce our listeners to tomes from people of various backgrounds, spanning a variety of subjects all over, well, the spectrum. The Christmas season is a joyous one, a time when people seem to come together more, are the most charitable, and they seem to have a feeling within much different from other times. My guest on Book Spectrum is someone who has dedicated her life to spreading the Christmas season all year. Yes, all year! We're having fun doing this interview close to the Christmas in July thing, and we'll talk about that in a moment with Renee Baker, speaker, joy spreader, and author of Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of Year. Welcome to Book Spectrum, Renee.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Nice to be here with you.
Nice to have you here, too. Before we discuss the book, let's talk about you.
Okay.
When was it that you discovered you wanted to spread the Christmas cheer all year?
Oh, well, you know, I've always really loved Christmas. It's always been a very special time of year for me. Ever since I was a child, you know, I realized that no matter what else was going on in my life, that there was always extra love at Christmas time. And so when I grew up and I started a Christmas caroling company because I've always been a close harmony singer. And we just had our 23rd year for caroling, and that there are Broadway holiday carolers in New York City, in the tri-state area, and in Philadelphia. And one year, my spirit was gone. I mean, my carolers, they have names for me. They call me Mrs. Christmas, Queen of Christmas. My favorite is Carol Boss.
I like that too.
Right? Like Cake Boss, but Carol Boss. So that's my favorite. But, you know, and they think that I've pretty much got the corner on the market for Christmas spirit, you know? And maybe I do. But this one particular year, it was just missing. And it blindsided me. I didn't see it coming. I didn't know why it happened, but it was painful. And I did something that particular holiday caroling season that I never had to do before and I never want to do again. I had to fake it. I had to fake the joy because it was my job to bring joy to other people, but it never felt like a job before.
It's not one of those where you tripped on a toy duck like the Burgermeister Meister Burger or anything like that, right?
Wait, Chris, I love that. I think I'm going to have to use that. That's kind of like what it felt like. Yes, I have to say. thank you for that. So, but it was. I just had to suffer through it. It was like a cold pit in my gut. And the more I realized it was there, the more painful it became. I really sort of thought that, once we get the tree up, it'll come. Okay, it didn't come. Okay, I'll have some eggnog. That didn't help. A candy cane. No. Well, when we get to our first caroling job, you know, that'll do it. And that was when I realized it was not there. And the closer we got to Christmas, the more I realized it wasn't there. And it was just a mystery, a very painful mystery for me. And so it was January. It's the third week of January, and I've just taken my dead tree down and out to the curb, you know, and I'm sweeping up the dead needles, and I'm just asking myself, you know, what happened? And I traced my steps back all the way through the past year, all the way back to January, and actually, it might have been December. It probably was December, now that I think of it, but something happened that really hurt me. And I thought that I'd gotten over it. I didn't think I'd been dwelling on it, but it attached itself to my Christmas spirit somehow. And it damaged it. Kind of like, you know, those blue marbles in that Pixar movie about emotions, you know? It's like my Christmas spirit had turned into one of those blue marbles. And so I thought, oh, wow, so that's what happened. But I don't want to live in a world where I have no Christmas spirit. So what can I do to proactively get it back, or at least try? I have to try. So I was sweeping up those needles, and right literally under my nose at one point was, there's a box that housed one of my caroler's top hats, and on top of that was his caroling book that he'd returned to me. And I thought, I wonder. I picked up the carol book. It's a binder with about, you know, almost 70 carols in it, and Hanukkah music too. And I just started flipping through it, and I thought, I wonder if the answer's in here. And I thought, of course, I know a lot about Christmas carols, right? I've been doing that for, at that point, over 16 years. And I've been singing them my whole life. But I thought there must be so much more to know about these carols. And so I, right then and there, I challenged myself to study a carol a week for a year, but studying them in a way that I'd never done it before. Like, who wrote the lyrics? Who wrote the music? Do we even know? Some of them are actually ancient and we don't know. Where were they written? For what audience were they written? How have they touched people's lives since they were written? And the very first week, the very first day that I started with this process, I already got my spirit back because it was so amazing, and it reset my holiday spirit trigger. And so I just kept on doing that for the whole year, and I still do it. I just don't do it every single day anymore.
What a story. Renee Baker is with me. She's the author of Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of Year. You're listening to Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani. People are probably listening, thinking, what's going on here? It's summertime. What are you talking about Christmas for? But some listeners might know Christmas in July is a real thing.
Yes. Christmas in July is a real thing, and there are many people who actually would love to celebrate Christmas all through the year. I do think it's great that it's not every single day of the year that people are actually celebrating it, and you see it everywhere, just because it would take some of the specialness or the anticipation of it. But halfway through the year, there is a lot of joy that people find from actually just concentrating on Christmas a little bit more. You know, I don't know that very many people actually put up trees in July, but they love watching the movies and they love listening to the music and they love looking at holiday images because it makes them happy, because it really is a sense memory. You know, I talked about the holiday spirit triggers. Well, really what they are is they're sense memories, which is an emotion that gets attached to one of your senses, you know, your sight, smell, sound, tactile feeling. And these are the things that people can tap into in Christmas in July. And this is what I found I was tapping into as I studied the history of each one of these carols all through the year.
That's important because you're a caroler, Renee. And not in the not in the sense of, I want to define this, not in the sense of a bunch of people who drink spiked hot cider and sing in their own neighborhood. You're a pro, or again, we said you were referred to as a carol boss. For our listeners, talk about what that means, the culture of caroling, dressing in period, rehearsing, song selection, and being the de facto carriers of cheer.
Right. Well, caroling actually started out, a long time ago, like in the 1500s, outside England, and they were farmers and their wives, and then it became their children, who really were struggling, and they would make up a bowl, and put a wassail, that mixture in there, and that was usually like a wine, and punch sort of concoction with or without fruit bobbing about in it, and they decorate the bowl, and they would go to their more wealthy neighbors' doors, dressed in tatters usually, and they would sing them a holiday song and offer them a drink from the wassail bowl, and they would hope that they would get invited in and be given a treat from the wealthy people and given, you know, even just a coin, and they often were, because at Christmas time, there was just a greater sense of charity and mercy and love amongst these people who the rest of the year didn't really care that much about the poor people. And yeah, so really these farmers and their families, they depended. It could be the difference between life and death for these people. And so it became a real thing, and caroling, but then it got out of hand. many years later, it became more like what we know today as St. Patrick's Day or even Halloween. You know, like drunken people, drunken guys going door to door, just bellowing out what they want. You know that we wish you a Merry Christmas, right? We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know
that's the one. That's the one where they demand the figgy pudding at the end, right?
Right. And how did that make you feel, Chris? I mean, I've always been uncomfortable singing that verse.
Yeah, they don't even say please.
It's rude.
They demand you to bring it out here. They say bring it out here.
Right now. Right. Yeah. And we won't go until we get some.
Oh, boy. And
right? Okay, well, there's a story behind that.
Okay.
And these drunken marauders who would go door to door, it's like they got drunk and brave and also wanted to take ill advantage of that. You know, it's like the kids that are too old to go trick-or-treating, except only more dangerous. So they would go bellowing down the neighborhoods with a song like this, "We Wish You Merry Christmas." There were several of them that they were wassail songs. And several of them would just add verse after verse about what we want. We want this kind of food. We want money. We want household items. We want to do things to your daughters. And the people would be listening at their doors. I'm not making caroling sound very good, but
we'll get to the positive side a little bit later on.
Yeah, because it's fascinating. So the people of these richer houses, they would listen intently as they were coming down the street at what it is that they want, because they would go scurrying through their house and try to find, I mean, not that they're throwing their daughters at them, but they would try to find if it's a certain kind of food or household item or something, they would try to find it, and they had to open their doors to them, because if they didn't, they would break down the doors. People would break down the doors, women were raped, and there was murder. And so Christmas was actually banned for a while. The celebrating of Christmas was banned, publicly anyway.
No wonder Ebenezer Blackadder slammed the door on those people, or learned to slam the door on those people in the great Christmas classic, Blackadder's Christmas Carol.
Blackadder, wait a minute, I don't know this one. How is that possible?
It's kind of like the regular Christmas Carol, but only in reverse. Edmund Blackadder, or Ebenezer Blackadder, was the nicest guy in town, but everybody was taking advantage of him. So the three ghosts, or one of the ghosts of Christmas, comes to visit him in the middle of the night and says, well, he's a saintly fellow, unlike his relatives. And the guy was wondering how his relatives were, finding out that the Blackadder characters were generally the villains of their comedy shows. They were pretty greedy and conniving and things like that. Ebenezer learned the lesson from them that bad guys have all the fun. And it was sort of the opposite of the real Christmas Carol.
I'm going to look that up. I have to see this.
Got to watch it. Blackadder's Christmas Carol.
I have to watch it, for sure. I will.
Renee Baker is with me on her book, Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of Year. Seriously, though, and you delve into the history of these Christmas carols in the book, I'd like to know, and you do this in the book, so maybe you can skim over it and let people read the rest of it.
Okay.
I was always curious of how the 12 Days of Christmas came about, because taken literally, it could get quite messy in somebody's house.
That's a lot of birds, right?
A lot of birds, and a lot of cleaning up and things like that. Not good. There's a lot of milk, too. You don't want to waste the milk.
What does that have to do with Christmas, right? Right. That was a fascinating find. And the thing is, it's not 100% agreed upon, but most Catholic scholars do agree that this is what happened. So back in the days when Catholicism was actually banned in England because of the monarch at that time, So it was illegal. There were no churches open. The priests were being persecuted. A lot of the priests left, and people couldn't practice Catholicism. But they would have underground services together in certain homes, and they would have certain sort of signs to each other so that they would know who was safe. And during this time, they wrote this song that taught the children about Catholicism, about Christianity. And so each one, first of all, on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. True love is God. He's everyone's ultimate true love. A partridge in a pear tree. Well, the partridge represented Jesus. And there's some really interesting information about why that is so. And then the tree, some people believe, represented the cross, you know. And then each one of these things, like two turtle doves, it represents the Old and the New Testament. Three French hens, faith, hope, and love. And it goes all the way to 12 with biblical Christian imagery that would teach the children. And then it did become a parlor game. You know how you can learn things through music, right? More easily. And so it became a parlor game. Some people believe it was only ever a parlor game, but most of the Catholic scholars disagree. So, and I love that idea, you know, if you look at all the imagery for, 1 through 12, there's something amazing for each one of those that helps you learn. And my favorite in there was I talk about the word piety, which came out of my research into one of those numbers. And I know I'd never liked the word piety. It just always conjured up for me people who were holier than thou, or just it was more about acting a certain way than actually feeling it in your heart. But when I read about what piety really meant, and also something that our current Pope said about piety, I changed my mind. That's the beauty about studying this kind of stuff, is learning that you can change your mind about something.
Renee, Christmas carols might be considered seasonal fun these days, but you reveal in Defeating Scrooge how relevant they really are to world events today.
Oh, yes, I do. Right. So I talk about, I'll list the lyric to the carol, and if we knew who the composer and the lyricist were, I list those and their birthdays. And then I find there's so many aspects of the history of these that you could delve into. But I chose one for each of these, and then I would tie it into how that could be applied to today. There's a lot of wisdom in these carols. And I found that when I thought about where they came from, I realized, the more things change, the more they stay the same. There's a lot of things going on today that they dealt with back then. And it's worth looking at the lessons that we can learn from looking at the way they either succeeded or screwed up back then.
Well, your TEDx talk, Renee, was about world peace and Christmas carols, kind of how the two can juxtapose into each other.
Mm-hmm.
Tall order, I'd say, especially now, but maybe.
Well, it is. It is a tall order right now, and I haven't actually spoken about this yet, but the TEDx talk was about how making music together in a group, actually, there's scientific evidence behind how it actually increases cooperation, coordination, and empathy so much so that it can be felt for decades later when people make music together. And I had suggestions for ways that people could actually do that, like at the beginning of board meetings and things, very simple ways. And the reason that I saw this to be true is that every year that we carol, I see it happen not only with the people who are caroling, the professional carolers, but the people who gather around us and sing together, strangers singing together, people of different faiths, religions, ages, all sorts of things singing together, and there is this palpable peace among them and an excitement and also this spirit of the season that you just can't deny. I've got carolers of such diversity. I've got Christian carolers, Jewish carolers, Buddhist carolers, agnostic carolers. I know I've got at least one atheist caroler. So,
an atheist caroler. That's odd.
But here's the thing. We all recognize this palpable spirit of the season that we love and we practice. We hold ourselves accountable to the hallmarks of it. And so there is something really palpable about all that. But so getting back to making music together in groups, we'd be at the Botanical Gardens in New York, right? And there's even more diversity there because people are coming from all over the world. And they'd gather around us and they'd sing, and maybe we'd be singing a more traditional Christmas carol that's singing about the nativity, or maybe we'd be singing a non-holiday specific winter song, or we have this whole Hanukkah section as well. And if we were singing one of the more Christian carols, you can sometimes tell if somebody is a Jewish family that's just not comfortable and they feel like maybe their child feels a little left out. And so we would just flip over to our Hanukkah section and start with that. And you wouldn't believe the way their faces just light up, like they feel seen. And I think that we could all do that a little bit more, is just look at each other's experiences and include them and make them feel seen. So there's a lot to be said for making music together in a group. In the TEDx talk, the TEDx talk is called Can Caroling Lead to World Peace? And it starts out with the story of the unofficial Christmas truce of 1914. With the German soldiers in one trench and the British Allied forces in another, and how it was actually singing together from down in their trenches, a Christmas carol that brought them out of their trenches and brought peace for them for 48 hours. It wasn't their fault that the war started back up again. It was the commanding officers. But at any rate, so how do we do that today? I can tell you that my church choir, we've been doing virtual choir. So, you know, it's Zoom is just a godsend right now. So we're recording them and sending them to somebody who knows more about tech than I do. And then they put it together, and then we do a Zoom where we're recording our faces singing these. And so people actually are making music together. And it is a very fulfilling experience. But I do miss being in the same room singing with people together. There's just something about that.
Renee Baker is with me on Book Spectrum. I'm the host, Chris Cordani. Renee's book, Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of Year. In the book, you have a spirit saver process through caroling and holiday cheer.
Yes, I do.
We live in an era where the so-called news media profits on evoking emotions of fear and misery. Perhaps that process, and our listeners, if you pick up the book, will read about that, can help combat these forces.
Well, I would love that, because you're right. There's a lot of... It seems to be very entertaining to get people riled up and put them down. It seems to make people feel better, and unfortunately, it's been a growing trend the last few years. But yeah, the Spirit Saver process—it's a process that can be done by yourself. In fact, that's what I recommend. That's what I did starting that third week of January that year. I mean, I got my Christmas spirit back. The third week of January, which I still find amazing. And so after trucking around like that for a while, I shared it with a few friends, and they loved it. It worked for them. I finally just thought, you know what? I just should share this with a lot of people. So it's a very simple process. As I said, I was going to study a carol a week for a year. I went through the year doing this, realizing that it was really working for me. And so I laid out this whole process because as I was going through that year, I was looking for calendars that I could apply this information to. So I spent so much time in office supply stores looking through those journals and the at-a-glance different kinds of books. And I did buy some of them, and nothing really fit. So what I did was I created my own. And then I actually had that published after the book so that I could share it with people. And actually, if people go to my website, they can actually download free pages. There's a couple of free gifts they can get from reneebaker.com. There's a carol book for your parties that not only have the lyrics to some of the most favorite carols, but it also has a fascinating historical fact about it to lead in with, and a parlor game question. So it's great for parties, and that's free, free download. And also I have the Spirit Saver calendar workbook pages there for free. So that's how I went about doing it. And this makes it very easy. And it's also got a huge list of carols, and it's got the process all laid out on it as well.
You can find information on that on your website, reneebaker.com. It's spelled differently, R-E-N-A-E Baker.com.
That's right.
Again, I want our listeners to know, Renee, this is not just a research book or uplifting piece by a writer. You live Christmas and caroling year-round. In fact, you founded The Smile, that's I Smile, that is, in New York Productions, a real company of Broadway holiday carolers. We touched on that, and you wear the real costumes. You lead the Christmas spirit-themed workshops, speaking engagements, and events.
Yes, and I would say that doing this at this time of year is a great time of year to do it. I sometimes lead the Spirit Saver workshops during Lent. So through a church, it would be like a Lenten program or a women's retreat or book clubs, you know. I made an online version of this, which you can also find at reneebaker.com, so that people can... They can just download it when they want to, and when they feel like they want to bump their spirit up, they can do it. They can do it with friends, or they can do it just like I do on my own. But it's got a lot of great information and a lot of fun and music and workshops or worksheets. And so any time of year that you're feeling blue, it's a good time, or even when you're not feeling blue, you just want to make sure that your Christmas spirit is intact and tended to before it gets to be Advent. Because at that point, I find that there's such pressure to have Christmas spirit. Like, we put it on ourselves, but the world puts it on us, you know? And if we don't have it and we notice we don't have it, it makes it all the worse. So it's like being on a tilt-a-whirl at an amusement park. You know, if you're spinning around on that tilt-a-whirl and your flip-flop or your hat or your sunglasses fly off, you're not going to get those things back until after the ride has stopped and you can get off. And I feel like Christmas spirit during the Christmas season is the same way. You know, it's really hard to assess and calm down and do the work you need to do to get. And when I say work, I don't mean toilsome work, but do the contemplation that you need to do to get it back.
Renee Baker, thank you for being with us on Book Spectrum.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
You can find out more about Renee on her website, reneebaker.com, again spelled R-E-N-A-E-Baker.com. The title of the book is Defeating Scrooge, How to Harness the Power of Christmas Carols to Revive Your Spirit Any Time of Year. You can find a link to the book on our website, bookspectrum.com. You can find all the links on her website as well, reneebaker.com. I'm Chris Cordani, your host. Thank you for listening to Book Spectrum.